Hello, friends. It me, Bethany Rutter. I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It me, Alice Slater.
And we are collectively here with another episode of What Page Are You On? How are you, my good dude?
I am gorge, thank you. It's sunny, it's October, it's spooky season. What more could I possibly desire?
It's so nice today. I was literally just thinking, if every day for the rest of the year could be like this, then I would be happy.
Yeah, this for me is literally the perfect weather.
Ideal.
Like, it's chilly enough that I know exactly what I need to bring with me, but it's still nice and hot and warm and dry, so, you know, I'm fine in like a little shirt.
And just the sunshine, it's so nice, and there's not a cloud in the sky. So nice. I'm sure by the time this episode comes out, it's going to be horrible and raining, so this will be irrelevant, but whatever. Have you got anything you'd like to tell me about, Alice, that you're reading this week?
Well, I am reading two things this week. One is an audiobook that I'm reading, Deep in the Depths of the Night, which we're going to discuss on the pod, so I don't have anything to say. It's called True Indeed. Crime Story. More of that later. And then this week is I'm coming to the end of my current editing period, so I'm reading my own novel. That's what I'm doing all day today. Just
what a dream.
Reading away. And I love it, but I'm grateful, I'm happy, full of gratitude, but I can't wait for this editing period to end because I feel like I haven't read anything, I haven't had time to do anything else. So I'm looking forward to regaining some free time.
Yeah.
What about you?
I feel like you get to a certain point with a book that you are publishing and you're just like, I am so done with this shit. Like, as much as you like it, as good as it is, you're just like, I'm done, I'm out.
The thing is, as well, like my day job 4 days a week is copywriting. So I'm at my computer writing all day and then I'm at my computer writing all night. And then my primary hobby is reading, but I just can't do the words anymore. I run out of word steam. So I've been very grateful for my audiobooks.
We love it.
Just give my eyes a break.
Yeah, I have not. I've been sort of all over the place with my reading this week, just for various reasons. Now I'm going to start a book because I am interviewing the author next week for this very pod. So
fun.
I'll say no more and then we can discuss it upon the time. So,
all right. Should we just like launch straight in for our little theme? So because it's spooky season, we have loads of fun spooky episodes up our sleeves, but as previously mentioned, we've had to read other things, so we're going to do kind of a fun little rating of our favorite scary reads. We're going to rate them between four different categories based on how scary they are, how gory they are, what their like literary merit is, so basically how much we enjoy the language and, you know, the kind of quality of the work, and then finally how horny they are.
The most important category.
The most important Halloween category.
Yes.
And this is going to be fun because you have a terrible memory for things that happen in books, and also we're going to try and make it spoiler free, so I will have to jog your memory with just single words like
but also
foot.
With stuff that's scary, I'm more likely to remember it because it's an actual thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, because it's an emotion that I felt. Yeah, I think I'm things that I personally found scary, I will remember.
And I just remembered one other thing before we dive right in, as we like to say. We've had quite a few requests for an episode on the kidney donation New York Times story. We're not going to do a whole episode on it just because the long read is so fucking long. I loved it. I've retweeted it. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can check my Twitter timeline. Otherwise, Google new kidney donation story, you will find it. But yeah, thematically,
Google kidney and you'll probably find it.
But like, on the one hand, there is so much to say, so we easily could do a whole episode, but it's just too much. And like, thematically, it sits really closely to the cat person story, which we did do an episode on. So I don't know. I feel like you can probably get the gist of our feelings from that anyway, but I guess, yeah, bottom line with the kidney story is everyone's badly behaved. There's no winner in that story. Everyone is naughty.
Nobody comes out looking cool and good.
Oh yeah, so that's that on that. And I do have one other piece of housekeeping to do. Thank you to everyone who DM'd with their reasons for hating Jonathan Franzen. I really enjoyed reading them. Turns out he has earned his position as like class clown, so that's cleared that one up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it turns out loads of goss, loads of juice. He's been badly behaved in many different ways. So yeah, forgive our ignorance. Thank you for filling us in.
We love you.
All right. Now let's dive right in, shall we?
Let's dive right in. So we're going to begin with a recent re-release that we've talked about several times because we love it so much, which is Come Closer by Sarah Gran. Now, categories. Scary. It's quite scary. It's more like disconcerting. Don't you agree?
It's like thematically scary. So it's like a demon possession novella, which, you know, scary. Did I personally feel scared? Probably not. Didn't feel vulnerable afterwards.
It makes you feel kind of uncomfortable, kind of unhappy, but not necessarily scared.
And then I wonder if part of the reason why my experience of it wasn't particularly scary is also that I read it at like 6 a.m, beautiful, bright, sunny day.
Possible.
Okay, so on the scarometer, where are you placing it? Between like 1 and 10. 10
being
scary.
I'm going to place it like 4, like 3 or 4.
Yeah, solid 4, I'm going to say. On the gorometer,
it's quite implied gory, isn't it? Like, it is quite gnarly, like the things that the demon does. So is it not implied gore? Is it implied? I've kind of forgotten what the gore content is.
So I would place it, I feel like if it was a movie, it'd probably be a 15.
Agree.
You know, like around like slasher levels.
Yeah, like kind of silly gore.
Yeah, basically, I didn't read it squinting. In terms of literary merit, for me, 9.
Yeah,
loved the writing style.
This is up there.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. Loved the execution, so I'm going to give it a solid 9. And then, horny.
So, bonking is an important part of Come Closer by Sarah Gran, but would you say it is, like, textually horny?
I don't recall it being horny.
Exactly. So even though there is, like, you know, it's a sexy demon, I think. Or, like, the demon, part of the demon is, like, luring the men.
Yeah. No, you know, I'm going to revise my opinion. Based on, we have to have, like, the scale has to have meaning. So to contextualize some of the other books on the horny scale, I'm going to put this one at a 5.
Okay, I accept.
Just like a middle ground 5, you know? Like, the purpose of the demon, you're like, there is some sexiness there. It's not horny. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not actively, it's not like a bucket of cold water.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
4 for scary. 4 for gory. Oh, whatever, it doesn't matter. Literary 9, horny 5. Okay.
So next up, we have a book that I, Protagonist of the Universe, have not read. Alice, would you like to tell me about it?
I can't believe that you haven't read this book and you haven't seen the movie. I know that you don't really watch horror films, but it surprises me.
Yeah, and also I like a chunky leading lady.
Let me think. So this is Misery by Stephen King, which I chose. This was like, so I read this last year. I have a little group, a little book club called King Along, where we kind of read Stephen King books and tweet about them. I'm kind of a bit of a deadbeat King Along though. I think we've done 5 books so far and I've only actually managed to read 2 of them, which was On Writing, which doesn't even count because it's a writing manual / biography, and then Misery. And I absolutely fucking loved it. I did not expect to love it as much as I loved it. Super readable, really gripping. Even though I thought I knew the plot, I was still absolutely on the edge of my seat. Scary. Okay, cool.
I'm
scary.
Interested in this. I want.
Yeah,
I may read this now. Thank you.
I feel, especially because I feel like the reason why I've struggled with King Along is that I find Stephen King loves, he's a bit waffly. He loves a backstory. He loves to tell you everything about the people, the town they live in, the history of the town. Like, he just puts so much into every book, which I find really, like, a snooze fest.
Mm.
I have no patience for long-winded backstories written in such, like, a kind of exposition-y way. So I always find, like, I get to, like, page 100 and nothing's really happened yet. I'm bored. Misery, like, kicks off immediately. And even though it is kind of superficially looks quite chunky. Yeah, really short chapters, sped through it. I'm going to say scary. I'm going to put it a solid 7. Gory, going to go right up to a... No, the scale has to have meaning. Gory, I'm going to go with an 8.
Yeah.
Everyone knows of the very famous hobble scene from the film, I'm sure. But there's other gore in it that was worse to read. And it's not quite the same in the book either as it is in the movie. So yeah, gore, solid 8. Literary, I'm going to go with a 6. I feel like it's a very... maybe that's not fair. It depends, like, when we're saying when we're talking about literary merit. I don't want to be a snob. It's written in a very functional language, but has incredible characterization and incredibly well plotted. So maybe I'll give that a 7.
I feel like pretty much every book on this list, we would score quite highly for, like, literary, whatever that means.
Yeah, maybe we should just take literary off as a category, because I don't think I'm going to score anything
that low.
Below a 7?
Agree. So scary, gory, and horny are, you know, the holy trinity, so...
Yeah, scary, gory, and horny, but then the discussion is the literary discussion. So horny, I'm going to go with, like, a 3. Wait, hold on. I feel like I tossed it out, and I don't really know if I can actually defend it. How horny is Misery? Stephen King tends to be very horny in his writing. In Misery, I don't recall there being... sexual tension between the kidnapper and kidnappee. I'm just gonna go.
I have a little cue for you.
Hit me.
Do you remember if the lady in Misery is written as fat?
Yes, she is specifically written as fat.
Cool. I was just interested. I assumed that they would not have got Kathy Bates involved if she wasn't, but
I can't remember. It definitely is fat phobic. I can't remember exactly what the vibe is though. I know I definitely discussed it at the time with my pals. I can't really remember what I said though. I'll get a manuscript of the chat. Oh, here we go. Okay, whatever. I'm gonna say it's definitely low-key fat phobic, possibly high-key fat phobic.
What isn't these days?
I know. Oh, if anyone's read it more recently and has a stronger opinion, then hit me. I just feel like I find some authors, like Steve, is so fat phobic so often that it just doesn't really, it doesn't stick out to me as much as it would do in something more modern.
It's just the texture of the work.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, moving on to Let the Right One In.
So this book is kind of okay, but it's interesting that it made such an incredible film. Don't you think?
I don't like the book. I absolutely love the film.
Yeah. Like, I feel like that's quite an unusual dynamic to have taken, like, source material that is fine, but not, like, it's an interesting story, but they just take out the, like, they've completely drawn out the most interesting, like, storylines and images and characters and turned that into this, like, phenomenal, beautiful film. And taken out all of the stuff that I remember being a bit kind of silly in the book.
So I hated the book. I read it as a student. I just hated it. I think the film is so beautifully shot. Like, the film looks incredible. The story is really gripping. I'm a big horror movie fan. I love vampire movies, but even outside of the kind of tropes of the genre, like, it's just so fresh and beautiful and original and scary and just really smart. And yeah, whereas the book just is really crass, is the best way I can describe it. Like, I really don't like the sexual violence in it.
Yeah.
Really, really didn't like that. Just really didn't like the vibe at all. That being said, though, on the scarometer, it's probably scarier than the film.
Yeah, the film is just quite kind of sad, melancholy.
There are some pretty scary... Yeah, but then I suppose definitely. It's like the difference between what's scary because it's atmospheric and what's scary because it's gory or because you're anticipating gore. And I feel like that differentiation between tension and violence doesn't exist on the written page in the same way that it does in cinema, in my opinion. And I feel like that's because the way that our eyes move on a paragraph of text is our eyes jump all over the place. So even if you're reading one word at a time, even if you feel like you're reading one word at a time, you are absorbing the language that's to come as well. So it doesn't quite snap into focus the way that the camera can cut, you know? So anyway, that's just a waffle about why the difference between...
I'm scared by a book and being scared by a film.
Yeah, well, more like, yeah, and why gore can affect one more than the other. Gore, however, in Let the Right One In, is at 9.
Really high. Like, that, really that high. Whole sequence with... Is it like a zombie vampire that won't die?
It's the... Yes, it is. It is. So if you're familiar with the plot of the of Let the Right One In, the film, it's the zombified body of Eli?
Yeah, Edie? Her parent protector, who's called Hawkon.
Yeah, who it's the, him.
In the film doesn't have a lot to do and doesn't have that many lines, but is a lot more prevalent in the book.
And I feel like his purpose in the film and the book is very different. Oh, not his purpose much, but like his backstory, who he is and why he is with this child vampire is very different.
Yeah.
In a way that I did not like. In that same regard then, horny, Let the Right One In, minus 50, minus 1,000.
Yeah, no horn, nothing.
No horn, just zero. Vile. Hated it. Ugh. I don't know why this is like, well, this is meant to be like, I mentioned at the beginning this was our favourite scary reads, and I was like, anyway, number 3 book I fucking hate, but there you go.
Yeah, but it's a vehicle for us to talk about how much we like the film, which is true. The important part.
Also, oh my god, did you see the play?
Yeah, I didn't love the play. I quite liked it, but I just think the film is so perfect that I don't think I was ever going to like 100% be wowed by the play.
It's really odd because the play is an adaptation of the original Swedish movie, not an adaptation of the book.
It's almost like everyone just acknowledges that the book might as well yeah. not exist at this point.
No, because isn't the American, is the American version a remake of the film, or is it, did it go back to the source material?
I have not seen the American film.
No, me neither. I just couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, I just thought, what's the point?
Nothing there for me. Maybe I'll watch it this year. As my thirst for vampire content continues. Next on the list, Dark Matter by Michelle Paver.
I love this one. Said, what is your favourite scary book? I would say it is Dark Matter by Michelle Paver. And indeed, I have said that only this week on Twitter.
I was going to say, I was like, yes, they do ask you that. And that is what you say.
Indeed.
So we've talked about this one many times, but we can always circle back round. My question is, though, have you ever reread it? How many times have you read Dark Matter?
I've only read it once.
Ah, interesting.
I just wanted to get the plot up.
So I've read it once, and I also did the audio, which is probably too short for your
No,
taste.
I did it on audio. That's how I have consumed it. Yep. I loved it. I loved the audio performance.
It is so creepy. It's so disconcerting.
So, okay. So we have talked about it many times, but I don't know if we've ever, like, described the plot. And I'm going to describe the plot now. And by describe, I mean read the Wikipedia page. In London in 1937, 28-year-old Jack Miller is stuck in a dead-end job and jumps at the chance to be a wireless operator on a year-long Arctic expedition to Gruhuken on the northeastern coast of Svalbard, though he has reservations about the class divide separating him from the other Oxford University-educated members of the team. Bad luck seems to dog the expedition, and when they arrive at Longyearbyen for the last leg of their journey, they're warned to choose another destination as their base, but the vague rumours about Gruhuken fail to dissuade them. So that is the book. So obviously you get what, I think from that description you understand what is going to happen to this expedition.
All goes tits up, love it.
Yeah.
In terms of scary.
Yeah, I would say this is up there. This is like my 9.
This is your 9. I'm going to say this is my 10.
Okay, fine. I'm going to say 10 then. I'm so wary of like making a commitment like that, but I think I have to.
Well, looking at the rest of the list, there's only one other thing that I would place at a 10.
Fine, I'm saying 10.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with 10. Gory? 7?
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't remember it being gory, but then I feel like there's possibly, you know, injuries, accidents, maybe there is gore that I've forgotten.
Oh, yeah, but also like the actual story of what happened to the, you know, with the, you know. Yeah. Yeah. The old, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
I feel like that's a pretty disturbing
it's element. Fair. Okay, fine. You're right.
Horny. Pretty horny. Yeah. It's a lot of yearning. Yeah, horny, I'm going to... Well, but then, you know, we're describing it as horny. There are only male characters in this book. So there is clearly... There's some gay horniness. That some is going to be...
Homoerotic tension.
Yes. But, you know, if you haven't read Dark Matter by now and you're listening to this podcast, consider this your sign. It's time. You need to find out what we're talking about and just crack on with it.
Especially now. This is exactly the time of year to be doing Dark Matter. Whether you do it in book form or whether you do it in audio form, you're going to love
and
it.
And as we always say, Thin Air is also a banger. I really like... I liked Wakenhurst. It's like a... It's more of a, like, ghost story. It's like demons in an old house. I really liked it. It was very atmospheric. I'd be very keen to see our gal Michelle return to her slightly ghosty formulaic origins. Ghost vibes.
Yeah, because I think that's my problem is that because Thin Air is so kind of structurally, vibally similar to Dark Matter, but personally is less interesting to me, I think it suffers from that comparison by me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know what? And I don't know if this is just because I read Thin Air first or because... mountains are more appealing to me than the Arctic. Thin Air, I think, in terms of themes, like thematically, they're identical, no difference. Like expeditions, loneliness,
class tension.
Yeah, it's all very, very similar. But a lot of Thin Air has actually stuck with me in a way that with Dark Matter it didn't. I think Dark Matter is the better book, but like the answer to the question of the haunting in Thin Air, I think chilled me more.
Maybe I'm going to go back and do both of them again. I think I've probably still got them on my Audible. I don't think I returned either of them because I was good that day.
And because they're bangers.
Yeah, but I would return a banger.
If what?
If I needed a credit. Look, if I was desperate, if I was begging on the street for an Audible credit, I would return a book I liked. I would.
I think that is egregious behaviour.
Me too. I try not to do it that often, but sometimes needs must.
Listen, you're speaking your truth, and we have to admire that.
If Audible didn't want me to return bangers, they wouldn't let me return bangers. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, next on the list.
Okay, so this is an interesting one.
I've included it for a very specific reason.
Okay, tell us about it.
Okay, so the book is True Story, right? By Kate Reed Petty. We've talked about it on the pod probably more than once. It is a story of sexual assault in high school. And it's told through many different materials. So college application letters, transcripts, a play that two girls had written together when they were children. The reason why I've included it in the horror list is because the book is marketed as four different genres. They kind of talked about it as being, and there is a line in the book itself as well, it wasn't just a marketing thing, about this story being both horror, a romance, a coming of age story. I can't quite remember what the others were now. A noir. And there is within the greater narrative, there is a small chunk of the narrator, Nick, spending time in a cabin in the woods. And it's really fucking scary. So.
Yes, you're right.
Whole section give you the willies?
Yeah, that's scary, that bit. That is genuinely scary.
So I feel like, yeah, the whole book, it's not horror, but also if you're someone who doesn't like horror that much, then it's potentially something you could read this time of year for that horror narrative strand. For me, scary for that was way up there. I'm gonna say like an 8 because the whole book averages out at like a 4 in terms of scary, but that section is like a 9, so maybe we'll put it at 7 in the middle.
Yeah.
Gory. That section's also pretty gory. It's so hard to read. Not a spoiler, but at that point in the book, the character has a problem with alcohol and he's very clumsy. Oh, Lord. And there's an accident. It's just, it's really well written. It's horrible to read. It's very tense. Very smart. Really liked it. Horny, 0. There's no, it's just sad. But it's really, yeah, it's a really kind of interesting blend of genre in that little book. And yeah, what say you?
I am glad to think about this book again because, yeah, I loved it and I may revisit it actually.
I'm looking forward to purchasing the paperback and rereading it again. I read like a great big floppy proof.
I remember it well.
So it meant I read it quite slowly, I think, because I couldn't travel around with it.
Do you think this would be a good audiobook? Because I'm concerned that it wouldn't.
Okay, I would have said no, but now that I'm listening to True Crime Story, which we're going to talk about in a minute, I think, yeah, with the right performance, with the right voice actors, absolutely.
Okay, we'll cross this bridge when we come to it, but I do think that there is a fundamental difference in a book that's lots of different voices being good audiobook material and a book that's lots of different types of media. Like, would that come across as, like, easy to understand what that presentation is if you don't have it in front of your eyes?
I think that it would have to be framed, you'd have to have a framework of... But then I suppose the book mostly has that as well. Some of them may just kind of be dropped in. You have to figure out what you're reading. But you would have an intro, like, extract from college essay, you know. What's the name of that? Oh, that crime novel. Bloody something. The Scottish crime novel.
Oh, His Bloody Project by Graham McRae.
Yeah. Yeah. His Bloody Project, I tried to do on audio before I'd figured out how audio works for me. And that book is a collection of different ephemera. The problem I found with that is that when I was listening in like 30-minute stints while I was going on walks around my office, what I found was that when I picked it up, I had no idea what I was listening to.
Yeah, it's quite disorienting.
Yeah, and like I think that's not so much a problem in something like True Crime Story because you recognize the voices that you're hearing. Whereas, yeah, I guess with True Story, for some of the sections that are a bit longer, I wonder if listening to it, you'd have to kind of binge it to get the most out of it. Because, well, yeah, His Bloody Project was way too disorienting. I couldn't keep track of what was happening.
Maybe I'll give it a go.
Okay, next on the list. I know you've read this one.
I have. Pod favourite, Silence of the Lambs by Thomas Harris.
Oh, long-term listeners will remember when we used to bring this up in every single episode.
Every episode, circa 2017. It's weird, don't you think it's weird that we've been going for like 4 years, but we, for some reason, have never actually recorded that many episodes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we're only on like, we haven't even hit 100 episodes yet, have we?
No, isn't that so weird? I mean, yeah, obviously, really like, weird. Lockdown really threw us off. And we used to only be doing, like, fortnightly.
At one point, we were doing monthly, though.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's insane, isn't it? And obviously, this is, like, you know, chat that may or may not be interesting to our listeners. Who knows? But, you know, I do think the fact that this is purely, like, hobby for us is part of that. Like, we don't have sponsors. We don't, like, make money from it. So it's not like we have this kind of... commercial need to do it. We do it because we enjoy it, so we have to actually be enjoying it.
Yeah, and also, you know, sometimes it's actually really fucking hard to record a pod like regularly, and now that I have Wednesdays off, it's very easy because we have a whole day every week that we can find an hour to remotely record and we're fine. But pre-pandemic we recorded every episode in person, so that was really hard to like coordinate.
True.
And now look at us. Look at us now.
Let's go.
Anyway, the Silence of the Lambs, the Silence of the Lambs.
Whatever.
Immaterial. For both of us, one of our fav books. Do you class it as horror in your little head?
I would probably class it as like a thriller with horror elements.
Yeah, I very firmly think of the film as horror. With thriller / horror. The book feels a little bit more investigative.
Because it is fundamentally like a crime solving, but like that's what the plot of the, you know, the book is and the film, but it's them trying to catch a serial killer.
I am so due a reread.
Yes, maybe I should reread it too.
I think it's time. Maybe we can do a deep dive on it.
Yeah, because it is so good. But I also just think the film is so good as well that it's not like Let the Right One In, where one is vastly superior to the other. They're both like perfect, in my opinion.
And yet also I feel like, so the film and the book can stand as giants hand in hand. They're incredible. Red Dragon, which is the first book in the series, is a good, solid, good, solid book. Liked it. There's two different movies.
I've only seen Manhunter, which is the older movie.
Which is incredible. The newer one is fine. I think I always remember it as being better than it is, and then I watch it and I'm like, but then it all just starts going absolutely tits up. Hannibal, mediocre. Still fine, but nowhere near as good as Red Dragon. And then bloody Hannibal Rising. I haven't read the book because I hated the film so much. I just don't understand how you can take something so good and then make it so bad. How does that happen?
And I think because I love Silence of the Lambs so much, that's almost why, because I know that none of the other books / films are like that good. I'm not like that curious to get involved with them.
No, you should read Red Dragon and Hannibal.
Maybe I will, actually, yeah.
You didn't trust me. I know you. Trust me.
You know what I like.
Red Dragon, and then treat yourself to a reread of Silence of the Lambs, then slide straight into Hannibal, and then call it a day.
Bish, bash, bosh.
Yeah, you love it. Okay, scary.
It is scary.
Where are you on there?
Yeah, it's high. It's high. Just because of, like, actual personal peril, you know? Like, that's scary.
I feel like I'm gonna give it a reserved 7. Do I mean reserved? I don't know. I sort of feel like it's scary, film scary, but then I also feel like it's so familiar to me now, it doesn't move me.
So the bit where she is like in the house. That's like so scary to me because,
yeah,
and I feel like that is something that made me understand how good it is and how good she is as a character. Like, I think when you read a lot of kind of thrillers, or maybe it was a time when I was reading a lot of thrillers with protagonists who were just kind of like action heroes, who, you know, these kind of jaded old retired cops who are doing, you know, one last investigation and then they get into some scrapes or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just didn't ever feel like, even if they were in danger, that they were really feeling it. And then with Silence of the Lambs, I just remember in the film in particular, like, you can tell that she's so scared, like she's really scared. And I don't know why, but I was like, that's why this is so scary to me, is because if the person that's meant to be like fixing this is terrified, then it's a really scary scene. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, her fear is so palpable, and the danger that she is in is worse than she imagines. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, just that this feeling of being completely out of your depth in a life or death situation.
Is I feel like we're really thinking specifically about the scene in the movie.
Yeah,
I can't really remember.
Yeah, I know.
I can't really remember how that's written in the book, because the way that it works in the film is that you can see through the killer's perspective. You can see where he is. You have that dramatic tension of knowing she's terrified, and she is right to be terrified because he is right behind her. Whereas in the book, even though it's written in the third person, it's very closely focalized through Starling's point of view. And I don't think that we have that same sense that he's right there. I feel like you just get like the darkness, and then she hears the gun crack and she reacts.
That's why I do think I'm so fond of the film, because I think in every single way it becomes so visual. Like, it's such a perfect like transposition of, you know, from one medium to another. Like, it becomes like the storytelling is so visual, like just from, you know, the first scene where she's running in the woods, and then she's back at the FBI headquarters, and she's in the lift, and she's so short compared to all the men around her. And like,
yeah,
that's so elegant. I just find that so kind of neat, elegant storytelling. And I think that really extends to the thrillery aspects of it as well. Like that, you know, the scene with the night vision goggles and all of that kind of thing. I just think it's so perfect that I will reread the book, but I just think the film does it so well that I'm like, I love you for who you are.
Yeah, no, I sign off on that one. Where do you stand on gore in the book?
It's, yeah, pretty...
pretty fucking gnarly. Gory.
Yeah.
It's up there.
So I'm going to give that like a 9.
Yeah, a good solid 9. I feel like Thomas Harris writes with a very precise pen. Mm. Whether that's... I will never forget the very simple description of her and her roommate filling Coke bottles. They like pour out some of the soda, top it up with Jack Daniels, put their thumbs over the bottle and shake. And just that really simple image, it's written so precisely, it's seared into my brain. But he applies that same precision with gore, which makes it incredibly like toe-curling to read. Really, really chilling. And very elegant in his prose style. I'm here for it. For a book that is so action-packed, it really holds my attention. Whereas often I find, I'm sure I've said this before, long action sequences that you get quite regularly in horror fiction, I find really boring. I can't really keep track of all that movement. It doesn't interest me in the same way. Just more kind of simple, I don't know, scenes that have a bit more, that move at a slower pace. Whereas obviously on camera, action scenes are really exciting. There's loads happening. You're seeing it all kick off and like it's really exciting. And I feel like for a narrative that has so much happens, it's not packed full of those scenes, and it just makes it a really wonderful reading experience. Horny.
It's not especially, is it?
I wish you could see the way I'm sitting right now. I have my fingers steepled together and I'm like I'm like looking over the top of my glasses, like waiting for you to say the right answer.
What is the answer?
I think it's horny.
Okay.
I think it's horny.
For whom?
It's horny. There is the sexual tension between Hannibal Lecter and Clarice Starling.
Fascinating.
It's there. It's there. It's totally there.
Okay, I believe
it's also,
you.
It's canonically there. Not to do a spoiler, but it's canonically there.
Okay, fine. That's not what has stuck out to me from the book, but I trust your memory better than mine.
I don't know. I have funny feelings about it, you know? Like, I feel like if I was a 15-year-old on Tumblr, I'd be writing fan fiction.
Yes.
And people wouldn't like me for it, but I'd fucking do it anyway.
It's never stopped you before.
Although, yeah, I will say, we'll check back once you've read Hannibal on that one. I can't believe it. And you haven't even seen the film. Oh, that's insane. Okay. Moving on. The Woman in Black.
Which... I will admit I have not read the book of, but I have seen the play, and as far as I know, it is the same.
They do sit so closely together that my reading experience of the book, I couldn't really picture it beyond the stage play. Like, it's just so well executed. The only difference is that the play, for those who haven't seen the play but have read the book opens on Christmas Eve with a family telling ghost stories. The play opens with a man who is preparing for a Christmas Eve of ghost stories by seeking out an actor to help him tell the story because he doesn't feel like he has the strength to tell it himself. So that's the only difference, is this framework that kind of explains why in the theatre you just have two actors playing everything, playing everyone. They occasionally break character to discuss what they've just done. That's the only difference. Otherwise, they sit really closely together.
I saw The Woman in Black as part of a school trip where I can't even remember how old I would have been, but like we went, yeah, as some kind of school trip when I was at secondary school. And I went to a girls' school, and can you just imagine, like, all of us screaming and just being naughty and, like, just clutching each other for dear life because we were so, so terrified. Because it is genuinely scary. Like, that play is some scary shit.
It is so scary. I remember the first time I saw it, I was in, like, my late teens. And then I took my boyfriend when I was about 19 to see it. And just before, like, the curtain went up, he looked at me and went, "You are white as a sheet." he's like, "Nothing's even happened yet. Why are you so scared?" And I was like, "I actually can't talk to you right now."
So is this the kind of high you were chasing when you went to see, was it 2222? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, 2222, A Ghost Story. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I find the theatre quite stressful. I'm quite an anxious person. There's just lots of factors come together that mean that I don't always settle into a play. I really like horror though, but I'm very frightened of being touched. I'm frightened of, like, I don't want any actors to surprise. Like, the London Dungeon is my worst nightmare. You know, when you have, like, actors who are in the shadows jumping out at you? I can't hack that. But horror, theatre, if I know no one's going to touch me, I'm excited. If I don't feel vulnerable, I'm into it. The Women in Black I've seen maybe 3 times, and it still absolutely takes the wind out of my lungs, even though I know that I'm fine and that I'm safe. And, yeah, 222 A Ghost Story relied a bit too much on sort of cheap tricks, like between each scene the lights go off and there's a scream noise, and the same thing like there's the same thing happens in The Woman in Black. There's a moment where a character reaches for a doorknob and the lights go off and there's a really loud scream. I know it's coming every single time, and every single time I shit my pants, whereas when it's just applied as like the scene change, I don't know, it just doesn't,
like a chapter
it completely
heading in a novel.
Yeah, just having someone suddenly scream at you, you're like, okay. And it just means also that when something does happen on stage, nothing is as dramatic as, and in fact, do they even flood it with
sorry,
a red light?
One second, I need to answer my doorbell.
Oh, okay.
Hello. Hello, it was my Bloomin' Wild delivery. I'm back.
Your what delivery?
Bloomin' Wild.
Oh, Bloomin' Wild. I thought you said Bloomin' Wild, and I was like, what's wild? And why are you saying, and why are we saying Bloomin' now? Like we're the fucking Santa Claus in the, what's that book called? Father Christmas by, not Raymond
Briggs.
Chandler. Raymond
not
Briggs.
Raymond Chandler, indeed.
Anyway, The Woman in Black, conclusion, play is incredible. Book is equally as good. I think considering that ghostly image of a woman, if you will, in black is such a kind of staple in ghost stories. You know, like a ghostly female figure who can only really be differentiated by the colour of her dress is really standard, which is why Susan Hill picked that. You know, she I remember reading this incredible thing that I haven't been able to find since, where she explained her process of writing The Woman in Black. And she basically read loads of ghost stories, made a list of everything that was in every single one, and then used that as a blueprint to come up with this story. So, like, it's a very, like, interesting approach. Yeah, like, so it ends up becoming, rather than a cliche in itself, it actually feels like this incredible
synthesis,
like,
of what is a ghost story. Yeah, a distillation of everything that makes a ghost story a ghost story.
And, like, I have an important question. Like, why are ghostly women more frightening than ghostly men? Like, what's your optimum frightening person image?
Yeah, I mean, this is good shit. In answer to your original question, I think it could be that we perceive, like, women to be more psychologically complex than men. So we don't know, like, there's more kind of unknowable inscrutability in the brain of women. So someone's intentions, I don't know. Yeah, that's my answer.
I mean, I feel like I know historically, like, that we would think of, like, the kind of trials and tribulations that women go through historically would be kind of better fodder for a tragic ghostly figure.
Yeah,
but why am I as an adult
more
why is like
a lady ghost?
Yeah, like when I imagine, like, the most frightening ghost I can think of, it's the woman at the beginning of Insidious.
I ain't seen it.
You're not? Okay, of course you're not. Well, anyway, it opens with you're following, the camera tracks a shadowy woman walking around the outside of a house, and then eventually you see her peering in through the window, and she's this kind of, like, has this really scary face. That, to me, is, like, the scariest ghost I can think of.
I don't want to think about ghosts.
You don't want to think about ghosts?
No, they're too scary. Although, okay, when I'm scared of ghosts, because I'm not actually scared of ghosts. I am scared of humans. And I feel like that is a neat segue into our next book, which is True Crime Story.
That is an excellent, excellent segue.
Because
we didn't actually.
Oh,
we didn't rate.
We haven't done
So scary for me, The Woman in Black is 10.
Yeah, so scared.
Gory, zero. There's no gore in it whatsoever. Horny, zero.
Yeah. It's don't a fancy any of them. 100% yeah. Pure scares.
Pure fun horror. Okay, true crime story. So, caveat, it's like a 12-hour audiobook and I'm on hour six. It's okay. Like 9 hours, I'm on hour six. So I'm not that deep in yet. I am absolutely fucking loving it, though.
I knew you would. I knew that. I just think it's a perfect audiobook in terms of, like, the experience. And would you agree that if you were reading it on the page, it's not as easy to get into because you wouldn't necessarily differentiate the voices as easily and know who is doing what and
well,
what?
Well, have you seen the page?
No.
So apparently it's all written in different fonts. There's photos. Oh, like, apparently it's a very visually rich reading experience.
Okay, well, I fucked it.
Yeah. So, well, I'm really curious. I feel, again, this is probably something that I'm listening to the audio now and loving it. I will probably buy the paperback and reread it.
Mm.
If I enjoy the whole thing, like, just because I'm loving it now doesn't mean I love the ending. But, you know, if I do end up liking it, then maybe I'll reread it and see what it's like on the page. But I'm gripped. I love it.
It's so dense, like, just in terms of a thing that didn't happen. I don't know how to explain this in a way that does not make me sound completely idiotic, but for a thing that never happened, it's so, like, densely constructed as if it did happen.
Yes, like, it feels so real.
And there's, you know, kind of lots of characters, there's lots of storylines, there's, you know, some red herrings which are really interesting, there's, like, just loads of stuff, like, it's really got a lot going on. And yeah, it's like, for me, I don't know if you, I think maybe you will not have got to the bit that I found incredibly scary, but there is just, like, a scene that I found so scary when I listened to it on my own on audio. But in general, I find it scary because it is about, like, what I am scared of, which is, you know, you're in your home minding your own business and you hear a noise or whatever. Like, the idea that someone is in your space and shouldn't be. You know, like that Criminal episode, Bump in the
Night?
Yep. That's what it is closest to for me in terms of, like, what I'm actually scared of.
I think if these are things that frighten you, then I have a book recommendation. It's coming out in 2023
from Hodder. Is it called Death of a Bookseller?
By a plucky debut.
Yes. You know that I'm going to eat this shit up.
It's not quite, so far, I had a bit of a, it's very strange having written a book that you're still kind of, I'm still working on it, still editing it, but it's written, it's finished. I've written the whole plot, that's all done. I'm just fiddling around with it. But it's very strange to be in this limbo where, as far as I'm concerned, I've written it, it's done. For everyone else, when they read it in 2023, it will be a brand new book. So it's really strange reading other things that are treading in the same territory, and that, you know, you read lots of things that, like, have crossovers and things in common and similar ideas. And that's just the nature of writing, is that you're always building upon everything that's existed before your book does. But yeah, it's always with, like,
Kidney transplants, if you will.
To pick a random example. But yeah, it's like, it's a very strange experience to read something that's, like, thematically quite close to your own book. It's quite scary. You just think, oh shit, what if I'm gonna have to change something in mine? But that's the worst thing you can do. You just have to accept that nothing is truly original.
Yeah. And you know that you didn't, you know it, you know what the situation is. Like, you, just because it's kind of thematically kind of similar, like, that's nothing to worry about. Like, you
well,
have your
the
own
thing.
Ideas.
I know
you
that
have your
some
own images.
Like, some authors do, like, don't read stuff that's in there, in, like, that treads a similar territory because they're frightened of influencing them, or they'd rather just say if they haven't read it, then no one can accuse them of. I'm not really worried about that because I feel like there are lots of books that are about true crime. There are fucking loads of them. Loads of fiction, and there's loads more coming out as well. So, like, that's always going to be a factor, and regardless of what you're writing about, that's always going to be a factor. There's always going to be other people writing about the same thing. But yeah, I'm really enjoying I'm really enjoying reading something which is just so different. It's still about true crime. Well, it's about crime, rather.
Because I've just realised we've got quite far without actually discussing.
Okay, so the setup is, it is about, the framework of the book is that it is a woman who is researching a missing persons case, and she is emailing her chapters to Joseph Knox, the actual author of the book True Crime Story, the real life, the man who wrote it. So that's like the framework. So I can't remember her name. Is it Ella? No, the author.
Oh, sorry. You're right. Zoe's the missing girl. Yeah, what's her name?
I know. So basically you get, so she's sending over her research and some of her completed chapters. Her research consists of transcripts of interviews that she has taken with the friends and family of, and police officers, caseworkers who all knew or worked on this missing persons case, which is a girl called Zoe, and she's a twin, and she went missing in Manchester on the roof of her university halls of residence. She was last seen heading up to the roof, and no one saw her again. They never found her body. She just vanished. Because of that transcript style, the audiobook reminds me of Daisy Jones and the Six. Yeah, you know, like exactly, it's kind of stitched together like an oral history. So quite often one character will say like, oh, he was really drunk that night. And then it will cut to this other character's voice saying, oh, I bet that, yeah, she said I was really drunk. I wasn't really drunk. She threw her glass of wine over me. Like, that's why I stank of alcohol. So the there was a kind of constant conversation going as each person shares their memories or answers questions. And then as the narrative of the missing persons case is being told, there is clearly also another narrative regarding the writers themselves.
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, I'm loving it. Really smart, really fun, and genuinely quite scary. There's been a couple of moments that have really made me think, oh, fucking hell, if I needed the loo right now, I wouldn't be able to get out of bed.
Yeah. It pins you in your place because you're so like, ooh, something's going to get me.
I feel like that's a great pull quote for the cover. I'm just saying, paperback comes out, Bethany Rutter, it pins you in your place.
Yes.
Scary.
Yeah, for me, this is like a 9, 9, 10, like in terms of the actual visceral fear that I experienced at a couple of points in this book.
Right now, for me, about a third of the way through, it's a 6.
Yeah.
There
are like two key moments that I feel are like bone chilling. So hopefully you would enhance your score if you had got to those.
Gory?
Not especially, I don't think.
Yeah, it's a 0 right now.
Oh, there is some violence. Yes, actually, yeah. I'm going to revise that. I now thought more about the plot and yeah, I would enhance my score.
So I have hit, a character has been beaten up, and like the same character has also like has witnessed like some scars of someone who'd been obviously like attacked in a particularly gruesome way. So I guess 0 is probably unfair, but in terms of the horror related gore, it's pretty low at the minute. And horny.
It's definitely got a lot of sex vibes in it. So I would say it's pretty high.
Ah. Yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah. There is sex in it. There's a leaked sex tape, though, which I don't think is like a horny thing. No. There is some yearning. There's a lot of yearning.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, we'll see. Horny TBC.
Yeah.
On my part. Okay, we have two more to go. One that you haven't read and one that you have read. I just wanted to bring up The Last House on Needless Street while we're playing this game. I know that you haven't read it yet, but it's a horror novel from my friend Katrina Ward. She wrote Raw Blood, which I cannot recommend enough. If you love The Woman in Black, you have to read Raw Blood. It's really great. But I wanted to talk about her latest book rather than like her debut. So The Last House on Needless Street is about a lonely man who lives in a kind of ramshackle house at the end of the street. He lives a very private existence. The narrative is spliced between him, his cat's perspective, which sounds really out there, but it's great. She has like a really incredible feline voice. And the sister of a girl who went missing however many years ago. I can't remember how many years ago it is now. She went missing in the past. And this man was accused of her murder, but he was let off. And she's determined to find out the truth. So that's like the kind of rough narrative, that's kind of the rough plot. It's really fucking good. It's full of surprises. Every time I thought I knew what was happening, it turned out I was wrong. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I feel like it's quite hard. I don't feel like it's not massively scary. It's not massively gory either. It actually ends up being quite a sad, quite tender story, but it is undeniably horror. It's also not horny at all. So I feel like on the What Page Pod scareometer, gorometer, and hornometer, it probably scores quite low. But yeah, if you're looking for a spooky Halloween read, then it's one that I recommend. Last on the list, I just added this in as we were talking about Come Closer.
I saw it manifest itself in the note that we share.
Because I don't know if you know this, but with the Notes app on your Apple phone, you can share notes with people and interact. It's fucking, so if WhatsApp ever goes down again,
we can just chat on a note.
Use that, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I wish I'd thought of that when that was happening, because that would have been quite funny, but never mind. Anyway, last on the list, it's because I feel like in the Venn diagram of scary, gory, and horny.
Yeah.
It's like right in the middle.
Yeah, without it really being like explicitly horror in any like literary way.
It's in the cut.
It is in the cut. By Susanna Moore. Not Suzanne Moore, the baddie. Susanna Moore, the goodie.
Again, another one that we've talked about before. We actually talked about it with Come Closer. What did we talk about it with?
Yes, we talked about it. Let me have a look on my podcast. It was an episode called Deep Cut. Oh, we just talked about it on its own. We didn't share it with anything. Okay.
How smart of us.
Yeah. So.
Okay, so we've talked about it before.
By Susanna Moore. If you want to hear a deep dive on it, scroll back on your Poddy app to the episode called Deep Cut from 2019, pre-pandemic, when we didn't even know what a pandemic was.
Oh, heady days.
Halcyon days.
Yeah, I thought this would be a good one to talk about because it is really fucking scary. Would you agree? I feel especially by the very end, I was deeply unsettled. I was not okay. It's very gory. Like wincingly difficult to read in parts.
Disarticulated.
Oh my lord. Really, really hard to read. And also it is undeniably a little bit horny.
Oh yeah, very horny.
Very, very horny. It opens with a blowjob. It all goes south from there. That kicks off her involvement in a murder narrative. I don't even think there's anything more I need to say about that. It's really short. It was reissued. Was it reissued by Faber?
Probably.
I feel like they're getting all the good reissues. No, it wasn't Faber. It was WNN. This was reissued in 2019. It really slaps. I really recommend it. But, you know, proceed with caution. I feel like it's definitely one of the more grueling books on the list.
Yes, it is not for everyone.
Well, I had this plan to keep track and then we could declare which one was the horniest, the scariest, and the goriest, but I forgot to do that, so fuck it.
So I'd say Woman in Black is definitely the scariest.
Agreed.
In the Cut, goriest?
Agreed. Misery? Oh, In the Cut, by far In the Cut.
And then horniest.
I giggled because I was like, Silence of the Lambs, but then I feel like it's quite a niche angle on that one. I think Dark Matter's the horniest.
Yeah, maybe.
No. Well, no, In the Cut's the horniest.
But we can't give it two prizes.
Yes, we can. Yeah, it's our award ceremony.
Podcast. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So Woman in Black is the scariest, and In the Cut is the goriest and the horniest. The end.
Call it done. Well, we'll be back
for a very long time, so this is going to be a long episode. We have,
but bear in mind some of that chat is because we did a private convo about the kidney bitch. Okay, so for the remainder of, I was about to call it horny season, spooky season. For the remainder of spooky season, we've got some guests. We're going to do hopefully a little deep dive into a best-selling horror-related novel. I don't really think it was horror, but it is horror. So we have some good fun stuff. In the meantime,
be well, my friends, and we'll see you next time.
Bye!